This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor. Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College is here. We go to Brazil, and there is positive news in addition to doubts about Brazil, the largest economy in the Americas, the second largest, to my knowledge, in the New World, in the Western Hemisphere, a critical component of the success of the Americas, and integral to my understanding of trade in the Americas, and that all of what happens in the Americas doesn't stay in the Americas. So we go to the news that Lula da Silva, the three-time elected president of Brazil, is seeking a meeting with Mr. Trump at the next global meeting, which will be the APEC in Europe, in Asia. What he's looking to meet about could be to patch up the dispute over Mr. Bolsonaro's trial and condemnation. You will recall that Bolsonaro, the previous president, has been convicted of leading a plot that included an assassination plan after the most recent election, when for Lula da Silva not to return Bolsonaro to office. He's condemned to 27 years in either house arrest or incarceration. Since then, there's information that the so-called lawfare used against the Bolsonaro family, I believe one of his sons is now implicated in some fashion, to be condemned or tried or allegedly accused of participating in some undermining of the Brazilian integrity. It's all very vague because that's the nature of lawfare. That is now extending to other members of the previous Bolsonaro government. So whatever disruption we've witnessed these last weeks, it's not over. However, Professor, I'm looking for the good news first. Brazil has a coffee crop. We need it because the price of coffee, if you've all noticed, has been climbing, especially the good stuff, because of a bad harvest more than a year ago. At the same time, Brazil has lots of needs for manufacturing and for tariff relief. Do you regard this meeting that Lula da Silva is seeking with Mr. Trump to be a positive going forward or a one-off? Thank you.
Thank you, John. I believe it could be positive, but there will be a limited window of opportunity. There is an interesting article in America's Quarterly addressing this issue, speculating that is there perception within the Trump administration that the attempts thus far to impact Lula's behavior using lawfare against Jair Bolsonaro and his family have been counterproductive, and that it has effectively driven Lula not only to double down in those activities, but also has led to a behavior pushing him farther into the hands of China, including Brazil significantly increasing its not only military engagement with the PRC, but also its sales of agricultural products to the PRC and engagement on critical minerals and in other areas. And so the possible turning point, there's really two. One, even before you got to the 39-second conversation between President Trump and President Lula in the sidelines of the UN General Assembly meeting in New York, there actually had been the sending of President Trump's well-known negotiator, Rick Grenell, for a trip that was initially clandestine, but then reported on. And so the question is, was there kind of a recognition of a need to try to use a little bit more carrots than sticks? And you alluded to some of the carrots that are possibly on the table, some of the sanctions that have already been imposed against those who have been conducting lawfare could be, if not lifted, at least not broadened to extend to other members of Alexandre de Moraes' family and other judges and figures. Decisions could be taken on the 50% tariffs. And of course, Lula is very interested in the prospect of U.S. investment in sectors where there is a U.S. interest, such as rare earths, a sector where China is already there. And so essentially what we're going on is the fact that you had this brief friendly feeling, as President Trump had alluded to, and there's now active work to try to see if they can set up a meeting on the sidelines of the APEC, upcoming APEC leadership summit in Seoul. So this could open a channel. But the interesting thing is that if it fails to open up a channel, things are going south very quickly with Brazil doubling down on, you know, working through multilateral forums, working through China, as I alluded to, reaching out to Russia and others. And one of the prospects with respect to Venezuela that some of my colleagues are fearful of is whether Lula, if he is sufficiently wanting to thumb his nose at President Trump, if these rapprochements do not go well, would Brazil be one place that could offer asylum to a Nicolas Maduro trying to escape from a U.S. attempt to grab him? And so, again, this could begin to get better, or this could very quickly go south. And I think in the coming days, we're going to have a sense of which one of the two that is going to occur.
I like the model of offering Maduro refuge. That reminds me of something that happened back in the 20th century. I don't have all the details, but wasn't there a dictator in Haiti who was offered, I think Papa Doc or Junior Doc, I don't remember which one, offered refuge in France, and that at the moment resolved a violence in Port-au-Prince. And that's a model that's been used before. Would it work here in the 21st century, given the ability of people to reach into other capitals and, you know, damage income and take away money and force sanctions? Is it still going to be useful to negotiate such an exile for Maduro?
It's an interesting question, John, and thinking back to the fates of Papa Doc and Baby Doc Duvalier. But I think in this case, certainly the most attractive state that could offer asylum to Maduro would be Brazil. And that would have a strategic benefit probably from Lula's gambit to increase Brazil's international footprint and in his demonstration that he can be one of the leaders of the Latin American left, if not the global left or global non-aligned movement through the BRICS, which would be that for Lula to say, okay, we're avoiding a U.S. military strike in Venezuela. We're helping to resolve the situation peacefully and multilaterally. And we don't think that the bullying of the Trump administration is the right way to do things. And so we're going to resolve this in our good Brazilian peaceful way. And so if he could control the narrative on that, could be beneficial for Brazil. And certainly, I think Maduro would much rather hang out in Brasilia, where the U.S. Probably would not try to grab him, rather than to hang out in another place like Managua, which just doesn't have the same level of good food and other cultural accoutrements. But we'll see how this gets played out.
Too many villains, too little time. So we go immediately to Bogota. Evan, I'll summarize what I know from gossip, not from reporting, that the man, the president, Petro, Gustav Petro, is very ill with what is understood technically as chemical dependency. And that is said to be, it's not proved, but it's said to be commonplacely observed by people in Bogota for some time. Last Saturday, when President Petro was in New York for the UN General Assembly, he was on the streets of New York as well, making remarks that were irrational, urging the American military to rise up against the government on the streets of New York. And it was a conduct that, as a man who is either mentally ill or inebriated, I don't know which. There's more incidents, but you know them all. I'm just mentioning that one because it's most recent. But the people of Colombia are abandoned. The news from Colombia consists of more and more narco-terrorism. Is there anything that can be done there? Do we just wait and hope we get through the next election?
It's a great question, John. And among the Colombians that I talked to, including those within the armed forces and in government who don't have the liberty to speak out directly against their commander-in-chief, there is enormous frustration. As you alluded to, everything from the sense that with Petro's policies, you have legislative paralysis. You've had a disastrously ineffective attempt to negotiate what they call total peace with various different groups, which has really tied the hands of the Colombian military while it's allowed an increase fragmented array of groups to become more powerful with violence, war fighting, kidnapping, even to the point kidnapping of Colombian soldiers on masse, and drone strikes, which have literally killed hundreds of Colombian soldiers throughout the country. On top of that, of course, as you also alluded to, you have the sense, and this has come out with testimony from even his own foreign minister, who was there with him, of Petro's regular inebriation, largely due to a combination of cocaine and alcohol, if the testimonies are correct. And so with respect to the U.S. relationship, a leftist president with the gift of rhetoric, who with that inebriation has given to expressions which are eloquent but are highly provocative and counterproductive, especially with a U.S. President Trump, an administration that doesn't feel the need to tolerate such things and really is disposed to show that it will not. And so, as you pointed out, John, the latest of all of this, right after Petro in Colombia had been decertified for not sufficiently cooperating on cocoa eradication, which really is consistent with the data. He made this series of irresponsible statements, trying to say that what is going on in Gaza had very little to do with the U.S., but saying what's going on in Gaza is a genocide, and thus people should rally against the United States and Israel, and that should include U.S. soldiers who should disobey orders, and he called for the formation of what he called a world army larger than that of the U.S. Separately, he'd called for Chinese troops to enter Gaza. And very rightfully so. Secretary Rubio in the State Department said, we let people come into the U.N. General Assembly, to debate world politics and not to try to essentially incite, violence and insurrection, within the United States. That is not the terms of your diplomatic visa. And so pulled the visa. And again, that provoked a series of other Petro comments. But this comes on top of Petro reacting to the U.S. drug decertification by saying, well, if you're going to decertify Colombia, even though you're continuing to give us the aid because you've granted us an exception, we're just not going to buy arms from you anymore. And so it's really a deteriorating spiral in which it's not just about the pulling of Petro's visa and the renouncing of the visa of the foreign minister, which came after that, but it's really about unnecessarily rhetoric compounding the effect of Petro's bad policies to really defund and decrease what is a fundamentally important relationship both for the United States and Colombia itself, which is that security cooperation. And as those things don't happen, as the cocoa production in Colombia take off, Colombia continues to just go deeper down this spiral of again corruption and drug activities and violence and government ineffectiveness, with now the rapid kind of undermining of one of the most important relationships that Colombia had to at least try to hold the line as things were going south. And so for Colombians, certainly it's worrisome, Colombians are increasingly in that despair, I think, looking to next spring's election with the hope. Indeed, it was actually interesting that one of the candidates who was actually Juan Carlos Pinzon, who was actually the defense minister in a previous administration, got a page spread in the front of one of Colombia's most important magazines, Semana, where it says in Spanish, it's El País no necesita payasos, playing on the word país, but it's basically translates to Colombia as a country doesn't need clowns, referring to Gustavo Petro. And so I think it just reflects some of the frustration and disillusionment with where things are going in total, and the despair Colombians feel, and the hopes that at least looking to next year's election, that if there's not an easy way out currently, perhaps there's a path for taking a different course as we get into next year.
Seeking good news, Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We're headed to Mexico City, where there are positives. There's much else to say, but positives. This is the New World Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.